Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Feed the Crew. Today, we have Bree Monet. She's an accomplished director of photography and film producer out in L.A. How are you doing today, Bree?
I'm fine. I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Thanks. I'm glad you're here. Would you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, I'm Bree Monet. I am a DP and producer, now residing in Los Angeles, Cali.
And did you go to school for film and cinema?
I did. I went to school in Miami. My actual degree is a BFA in filmmaking and digital media.
Gotcha. So from there, what was your first job?
My first job, I stumbled upon an internship with a company that kind of had two names. It was Picture Perfect Production and 305 Films. And then I ended up apprenticing under a music video director. He did commercials as well. His name was Gil Green, and also working under Dial. And I was able to work under these two music video directors in Miami. And that's primarily what that company did, was music videos and commercials.
That's really exciting, especially right out of school, right?
Yeah. I did it from midway through my freshman year, all the way through after I graduated. I stayed in Miami for an extra year and continued to work with them. And then I left and went to DC.
Oh, awesome. Okay. And so over the years, I know that you've had quite a few mentors. And I wanted to ask you how important mentorship has been to you and your career.
Yeah, mentorship is amazing because, you know, I will say that it's really difficult. You know, I can bump into a couple other filmmakers who are not women, who are not Black women, who are not my age at the time. And they may have known someone or was able to walk into an office and get a job. For me, I tell people my skill set, and I had to always sell what I can do or prove myself. But when you have a mentor and someone in the industry that can vouch for you, that helps. But on top of it, you get to see and learn firsthand, you know, from trial and error from them. And then you actually be able to call someone when you are, you know, feeling down and out or doubting yourself. Right. And you can call someone for support. And through college and through like my career outside of college, and I was able to reach out to Gil and Dial and send them emails about projects or tell them about, you know, things that I was doubting in the film industry or how could I look for work and things like that. So it's imperative. I haven't spoken to Gil nor Dow for like several years now, maybe like 4 years or so, but I have reached out to people who I've met on set with them for them giving me these opportunities, which are, allowed me to kind of bounce between industries, and that's the film industry and the events industry, and so that was supportive, and that's good to have.
Well, that's good. So you mentioned the events industries, but can you explain to those who may not know what the differences are between film production and AV staging?
Yeah. So film production, you know, there's crews just like AV production as well. But for film, we're working together collaboratively in different departments. And you don't cross department. You don't do that. And what you do is you're working towards a picture, a film, and or a TV show or commercial. And so there's a level of hierarchy that's imperative. There's a particular standard of operations that you have to abide by. And the rules are a little bit more stricter in that, and I think in that industry. And but, you know, it's, to me, because I love it more, I feel like it's more rewarding because it's something that you're a part of. You know, you have credit later on. You know, you can look at an IMDb and you're like, oh, I have an IMDb credit. Somebody can watch television and see your name in the credits. And, you know, you kind of, and credit is important in that industry because you can start saying, oh, I worked on this big project, or if you win an Emmy, we all have Emmys now. We all have, you know, an Oscar now. So it's something to look forward to for me. Yeah. And because I like filmmaking, my family and friends can look at something that I worked on as opposed to being a party or an event. And if you didn't show up, you don't know nothing about it, you know? So,
yeah.
So the AV industry though, you know, it's collaborative and there are different departments there, but there are people with skill sets that bounce between departments, you know?
Sure.
It wasn't a piece of art 100% that I was working on that I was connected to.
Right.
I do admire that industry though, because it's a lot of hardworking people who, right, like, I had to start out building trust and all that stuff. And I was like, Jesus Christ, you know, and there's people who work in harsh conditions,
yes,
really bad conditions, because if there's an event and the night before that event, if it rained and you have to build something on wet soil, that's what, sure, you have to do. And so it's hardcore people, and it's all this work for something that's going to happen for an hour or so and then it's over.
Yeah.
So I think the two industries are different. The payoff is different, you know. You some people do like invoicing. It's not really a lot of, whereas in the film industry we kind of do time cards, we can get pensions, we can, even though there is a union as well in the events industry, but for me it's just more like a career. Sure. For me, as opposed to, I felt very freelance, very independent. I learned about entrepreneurship in the live event,
yeah,
kind of thing.
There's definitely a majority of freelancers over union in the AV events, mm-hmm, industry, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm,
and I understand what you're talking about, the creativity. I think that you don't get into any creativity in the AV events until you're putting on the production, until you're in that hierarchy and management where you're getting the creative, talking to the client, build, you know, mm-hmm, designing and building the sets. Mm-hmm. And that's the extent of creativity to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, so, that's true. Point. That's true. Because like you can work in camera and film industry and be like, oh, I shot this amazing video. And you see that camera movement that I did, this was dope, you know, but in, as far as camera goes in the events, it's like, oh, I stayed stationary. I was able to do a Zoom today. You know what I mean? Yes. It's like, that's just really what it is. Yeah. And no one really acknowledges that creativity, because it's not, that's not what's important. What's important is to have these stationary shots, right, that are well composed. Right. And that's it. It's not where you can be creative in the camera world. And that's really where I come from. So that's why I talk about the creativity. The light,
absolutely,
and design is an event though. And
no, you're
that design,
you're
is an event,
right, though. Mm-hmm.
They're mad creative. They're mad creative.
Yeah. And also, even with the camera work in AV events, I don't think you can, first of all, you would have somebody that's telling you what shots they want regardless. So you're not out there on your own being creative and getting shots, but until you got up into, you know, some $1 million one day production, you don't even have that kind of equipment, right? It's all standard, same old, same shot. Long shot, maybe handheld, yeah, maybe a small, mm-hmm, jib, till you get into those, mm-hmm, really, really large productions. So that's few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that there are more opportunities in film versus any opportunities you would have in AV?
Well, since I've been, I was in the film industry when I was in my early 20s, and from 18 years old to like 23-ish, and then from there, from 22-23, I went into like the AV industry, and I had been in that industry up until 2 years ago. So, and I'm 32 now. So, and I've been in that industry. So right now in my life, because I've been consistent in the events industry, I could fall back on making money in that industry, and I can have more opportunity, I guess, there. Because I've been consistent there, and now I'm getting back into film. But once I think the world is aware of me entering this industry again, or not the world, but LA for right now.
Oh, no.
And then,
let's tell the world.
Let the world know. If I want to go to Australia, they need to know. But, but if the opportunities are far, like I can do a lot of things in the film industry because I like a lot of things. Like the camera department is, you got your second AC, you know, your DIT, your first AC, your DP. you know, and even some people even think about the whole DP thing as like also including the gaffer. Like I could probably work around those positions, even though I just want to DP. So I guess, yes, there are other opportunities, but right now, you know, the people who call me the majority for, like, if I'm thinking about monetary opportunities, it's the events industry, because that's who knows me. And those are the clients who, like, want to call me for the work. Yeah. And those are the jobs I'm refusing, because I'm just like, if I get addicted to accepting the money again,
yeah,
I won't follow the dream, you know?
Right.
But recently I have been, because of streaming, I have been working a lot out here in LA, just shooting and enough. Was supposed to have several interviews and just random jobs will come. And since I just moved here, I would just take those jobs and have to reschedule, because I didn't want to, I want to build rapport, you know, I don't want to seem unavailable or things like that. So yes, I have been getting different opportunities. There are different types of jobs you can get that fall within the realm of camera here. And, you know, you can even fall into directing or even editing and different things that you can do in the industry. So yes.
Okay. All right. I want to ask you, what's the most significant personal or professional challenge that you've ever faced?
In DC, I co-owned a business with a guy there that a lot of people know. Mm-hmm. And it was probably one of the hardest things I ever did, because at the time I was studying marketing sales because I was doing some real estate to make extra money. And I applied that skill set to that business. And while I was growing that business, when I came into that business, the sales was only about 180 a year. And for me, I thought that was too low for a business. So by the time I left that business, we were bringing in a little over half a mil.
Nice.
And my goal was to bring in a mil, you know, but that was through marketing sales, yes, a lot of hard work that I put in. And that business became my baby. And I ended up hiring people who I cared about, whom people who would reach out to me and say, you know, I could take care of my family now, or I didn't know what career I would choose, or young people who I mentored, because I used to mentor kids, inner city kids, in teaching them camera, broadcast, and things like that. And I would, when they hit of age, you know, I would hire them for this, with this company. And while I was gone out of town, we ended up doing some government contracting, and I was able to transition this AV company into doing some film production stuff, like small documentaries for FEMA and stuff like that. And while I was out of town, I found out my business partner was embezzling money. Oh. And I realized that his characteristics showed that it was possible that this could happen, but I just didn't believe that he would go that far. And when I was approached by a contractor friend of mine, said, hey, you know, I loaned your partner, you know, 25K. And the reason why I know you're not aware is after I signed a contract, he said that, you know, not to tell you. And then as I did research, I found out there was a few other people he borrowed money from, and or asked for loans for the company, or payroll or things like that. Mm. And there were several other contractors who weren't being paid while I was gone. And along with myself, like, I would email clients like, hey, you know, this check hasn't come yet. And they're like, well, it says it was cash. And I'm like, well, not according to our bank account. And literally it'll be payments for me even working that I didn't get. So it was a significant amount of money that this partner stole. So it definitely personally and professionally affected my trust.
Right.
It affected my trust in me even trying to be an entrepreneur. Although I did change the sales, although I had some success in that business. Mm-hmm. And it was really difficult, because having that business was difficult, because at the time I was still in my 20s. And again, I say, a young Black girl, me walking into this white male dominated industry and yes, saying, hey, I own a camera company and I train people on camera and we should hire. They didn't trust me 100%. I couldn't close those deals. So this, my partner being an older Black male, was able to walk in and he say, hey, I own this company and I train people. They're like, oh, well, you're older. Maybe we'll believe you. Maybe it's a man thing. Maybe it was an age thing. You know, who knows? But so he was
thing.
The face. Yeah, or woman. Yeah, exactly. Or woman thing. Exactly. Or woman thing. And that was something that was able to happen. And that affected me. And that kind of also helped. It pushed me to come here. It pushed me to go towards my industry, because I was depressed after that. And I felt guilty. I felt, you know, responsible for all the people who aren't paid, who haven't been paid.
Right.
You know, I just felt very responsible for something and that I didn't do. And you know, it took me a while to get out of that, but sure. It was a huge lesson. A lot of people were upset with me that I didn't report him to the police. A lot of people were upset for me that I, you know, didn't go to trial for it. But I was in the middle of depression. Like, it was no way of me thinking forward. You know, it was no way of me thinking like that. And plus, I had these morals. I was like, I don't want to send another Black man to prison. You know what I mean? Mm. Even if he is actually a criminal. You know what I'm saying? So it was those sorts of things that was going on. And to this day, I haven't sent him to prison. I haven't been paid back in full. I still have debt from that business. There are some contractors who have not been paid. And this guy still continues to do business. And people continue to, there are men who continue to do business with him, regardless of what they may hear. And that, I think, but I take things up with the universe, and I just couldn't, I don't know if I have the energy to go to trial. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I don't know if I have the energy to, and it's the first time I publicly spoke out about
it. I was wondering about that, because this is not anything that I was expecting to hear. It's kind of shocking, but I'm glad you're talking about it. And talk as much as you want about this. This is kind of,
you know who this is.
I do.
I don't know if you heard about what was
I had
going
not,
on.
Not at all.
Oh, good. Good. That's good. It's interesting because some contractors created some Facebook groups. It was some text message groups that they had, and they were sending me in these groups, and they were like, hey, we should all get him. It's just more people kept popping up saying they were owed money. And I was like, hey, I've paid a lawyer to remove me from the business. I'm no longer responsible for what he does after this particular date.
Right.
But I'm sorry, you know, but some people were like, why didn't you go public? And why didn't you tell everybody to warn us, you know? But there were, you know, I went into my shell. That's what I did. You know, I went into my shell because I felt guilty. Remember, you know, I had kids who I trained that was, you know, I went into a shell.
This is somebody who, and this is very similar to, you know, a sexual harassment or some other abuse that somebody has suffered. You have been betrayed and that trauma is with you. So I completely understand where you're coming from. It'll take some time and you may go back and just decide to do something at some point, but until you're through the trauma of it, you're froze. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the same scenario that we hear from people that have been abused, and that's what happens. Mm-hmm. So I completely understand what you're talking about. Completely get it.
Yeah. Thank you. It took me a minute to be able to speak about it. I gained a lot of weight. Like, I was always a slim person, but then I gained so
much.
You look
great. No, you look great.
No, I lost some.
Oh, you
now.
Lost it all
I
again. Okay.
Now, thank God. I'm like 50. I'm in the middle mark now, but it was. I went to a show. I ate, you know, and I made poor decisions with people being around PN, and I didn't realize at that moment that I was depressed, you know. And also, I was dealing with the debt. Like, I'm getting calls, and the company was getting audited because not only was he taking money from people, he was getting loans, several loans, and I would find these ghost accounts that he created in the company's name, and I would subpoena and will ask him, the lawyer would have to get from him the bank statements, and I would see they're like, oh, you know, three of your sons were arrested at the time, and I was sympathetic towards that, but he would, you know, put money on commissary for these sons who were arrested or pay for hotels. Maybe he was a sugar daddy, who knows what was going on, or going out to eat. But it was just like all these things, flights and stuff like that, and all in his business account. And it was just like, you know, you can say that, you know, it was a mistake because you couldn't pay attention to payroll or something like that. But all these personal expenses that was made on the business account doesn't show that it was a mistake. These are movie tickets. These are high restaurant bills. These are parking meters. This is parking lots. These are a lot of commissary, a lot of money towards commissary. This is cash out. This is going to three different ATMs in one day. You know, this is all calculated. It's all shown proof on a bank statement that therefore you can tell me that it was an accident, but maybe that's the lie you tell yourself to not allow yourself to believe that you did act as a criminal. And you need to deal with that. And that's something that you'll deal with on your own. And I think that, you know, karma would get to that individual. You know, I have no I don't have any bad feelings towards that person anymore. Sometimes this person cash apps me a random $100 out of the thousands of dollars that I am owed. But, and this is what this person thinks is them doing, right? You know, but yet they're still running the business and stuff. But what it did push me to do is to learn something about myself. It's like, one, I learned that I walked into this business and the sales was low and it increased, right? So I know that I have a skill set there. I also know that even despite the fact that it was difficult for me to even get in camera, I told so many companies I can do camera, so many trained people in camera. It was people who I trained who would get opportunities, men who would get opportunities for me. And it kind of affected my power or my how I saw myself with strength.
Sure.
But now it's like, I know I'm good. Like, you know, I know I'm great at what I do.
I know you're great at what you do.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I know that I support people, like, and I give back and I support other women behind the camera and I share my information and I'll refuse a job sometimes, or I wouldn't even take a job if I knew that somebody was trying to replace someone else or think, you know, it was certain things that I did that I support, you know, and I'm cool with who I am now. And the doubt, the self-doubt and, was really how a person like that was. You wonder, how can that happen? It's really because you doubt yourself. And it's nothing wrong with trusting. It's just that also when you own a business, if this person's job is payroll, still look, double check them, you know? And I did. And
learned.
He used to argue with me. He used to argue. But it's
well,
cool.
Now you know why.
But that's why I'm here in LA.
I gotta tell you, I'm so glad that you're seeing your strengths because they are most definitely there. That's what I see. I knew nothing of what was going on behind the scenes. I know all the strengths that you have. And I definitely want to have you on one of our Women in AV panel discussions. That I think you'd be fantastic to be a guest with that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So you're definitely gonna have to come back on the show for that.
Okay, I'll do that
already. Like,
no problem. No problem. Thank you so much.
So, wow, that was pretty rough. That took a good blow to your ego, but I'm telling you, that had nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
It's something that happened to you. It's not who you are, if that makes sense. So I'm glad. And if you're ever doubting yourself again, please call me.
I will. I got your number. It was a lot of work that needed to be done. Meditation, spiritual guidance, all types of stuff I started to do.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, yeah, it's good. It's good now. It's been about, this happened in late 2017-ish, mm-hmm. like 2018-ish. Okay. And then, so it's gone on 2 years. And so almost 2 years and a half, because it was late 2017. Okay. So yeah, so it's approaching its third year.
That makes sense. That's when I left DC.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Yep. So then that's probably why you didn't.
That's why I hadn't heard anything
about
that.
About it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's get back to a positive note though.
Let's do it.
All right. What's the best advice that you've ever received?
The best advice I've ever received. I get a lot of good advice. The best. Do what makes you feel good and do it unapologetically.
That sounds awesome. That sounds mm-hmm. awesome. If you could go back in time to your younger self, what's the one piece of advice you would give yourself?
Trust your intuition and be consistent. Be consistent. It's okay to mess up because you're on the right path.
Mm-hmm. Sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. I got a lot of cool questions here. We were going through my questions and I'm like, oh, this will be great for Brie.
Okay. No.
How do you think your work impacts the community? You do so many beautiful things in the community. So I want you to go there.
My documentary work sheds light on the faces that I am familiar with and allow these stories to be told to the world. So it allows people to see their beauty. It allows people to see themselves when they may not be able to have a chance to do it. And because I'm behind the camera, you know, I had a chance to film something in Brazil about a young woman who was very strong, and she inspired so many other young women who may have lost their mothers and continue on to follow their dream. I was able to shoot a documentary with Complex for Black trans women who, you know, some of them may have had some doubts or couldn't see themselves on screen and see themselves on television prior to polls and things like that, and them talking about their stories and so that the world can hear that. And I filmed some people, men and women, who didn't realize that their lives were interesting or for some reason, and we've done films and shorts on them, and people, the way people receive them, it has helped them see how great they are. So I'm very happy with being around behind the camera and able to be a mirror to people.
Well, you actually left an impression on a lot of people back in DC, for sure, and it's all positive. Hope you'll take that with you.
That's what's up. I'm gonna have to have, throw me a big party. Everybody got the invite for my one of my birthday parties. When COVID's over.
Yeah. Tell me about it. All right. Yeah. So what do you personally want to leave behind as your legacy or your impact with your work? Let me rephrase that. Mm-hmm. What legacy or impact do you want your work to leave behind?
I want my work to be timeless. I want my images to be something that I am always proud of, and, you know, I can learn from myself. And the impact of my work, I wanted to change people's views of others if they have biases. I want people to see people as humans and relate, regardless if you are a man, you relate to a woman's story. If you are white or Black, you can relate to each other's stories. I want to be a part of helping bridge those gaps, and I hope my work can be a part of that.
I hope it can too. I think you're on the right path.
Thank you.
Tell us something that most people don't know about you.
I think I'm pretty transparent with people. Most people don't know about me. I like watching cartoons.
You like watching cartoons.
I love cartoons. But most of the cartoons were like messages, like Avatar: The Last Air, or documentaries on science and the galaxy. That's really what I spend my time doing.
you got some heads nodding over here in the studio. They're like, yeah.
Hey, yes. I like cartoons with purpose.
Must be your generation. I haven't seen cartoons since my kids were little.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's my stuff.
I dig it. I get it. This may be a good one for you. How do you define success?
I define success when you can look at what you're doing and you're happy about what you're doing, and your work is something that you are gracious of. Like, your work is rewarding you, and that's just what it is. It doesn't matter what you do, but you feel fed by your work. And if you feel fed by that work every day and it's not depleting you, then you're successful.
So I would ask you, what's the biggest change that you made in 2020? But I think that would be your move to LA.
And cutting my hair. You remember I had locks.
And cutting your hair. I know. I noticed that when we first got on. I was like, well, I don't know how long she cut her hair. I haven't seen her in a few years.
Yeah, I cut my hair and I moved to Los Angeles.
Are those the biggest changes you made for work? Did you make any other big changes for wealth? That's even a more of a dumb question on my part, of course, because you left the AV and went to follow your passion in film.
Yeah. And I get clients who still call me an AV, and I have to remind them. I had some people who was frustrated with me because they had new clients and the client liked me behind camera, and I was sending some referrals in, and the client was, I guess the person may be upset that maybe they might lose the client, but I don't think they will. The client's going to go somewhere else. They're going to get somebody on camera. It doesn't make, you know, I don't know. But some stuff like that, people, but it's just, I just find that the live event camera work is too monotonous. It's too monotonous for me. I like to randomly show up to, maybe I'm shooting in the studio. Maybe I'm chasing somebody in a car filming. I like that type of stuff. I don't want to be in a cold hotel ballroom all day long. or outside in the sun all day on the mall, and it's just, it's no longer exciting. I could say that I did it, and I was some rewarding moments of it. You know, I would be honest. I was able to film Obama. I was able to film the Clintons. I was able to film ESPN Spelling Bee several years. You know, I was able to sit in rooms and hear stuff about technology and the politics and of the government and all these different things that other people can't hear, you know? So I there were some rewarding moments, but I'm tired of being bored, I guess.
Well, I can see that industry is holding you back because you are really, really good at what you do. And like you said, you've got people that are, they're calling you because their client wants you. That's a little bit rare when you're talking about our camera ops in AV, you know? So there is some rarity to that. And it really puts people's perspective into view as to how good you are at what you do. And I'm just being 100% honest with you. I am one that always wanted you as well, right? Mm-hmm. But to say that my client recognized you and wants you, that's an even bigger step. That's huge. It's huge, Bree. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you're right. You definitely gave me some opportunities. I'll never forget that. The one time I showed up, I was putting tape on the floor. And after that, you was like, oh, you can do camera. And I was like, oh, what? She looked out. That's what's up. Yeah. It was like, it was so hard. I had to push cases for a lot of people until they saw it. But like when I met you, I put tape on the floor one time. And after that, it was just like, you called me for camera. So I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, you're really good. And a lot of other women have followed in your footsteps because of that. Mm-hmm. And you were able to open my eyes to other women camera ops. And I appreciate that. Some of them I didn't know because they weren't speaking up. So like I know them for years and years and didn't know that they were a camera op. You know, I hear that from you and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like I could have had this person working camera for years and I didn't know it. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and I think that's part of, so you and I have some things in common in that I like to make sure women are speaking up and feel more comfortable speaking up and stepping out and getting more confident about their skills. I think we as women are not as brave as men are in, you know, promoting our skills. So It's a huge step. So I like to tell women, no. If it's something you can do, let's try it. You know, we're more reserved about, you know, saying something about our skills.
That's a valid point. That's something that should be on a t-shirt to remind all women that that's what we do. Like that's something that we do inadvertently. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really why, you know, a lot of men are successful. They're not afraid to, even if they have the little bit of the skill, but they trust in themselves enough to say, hey, I can do this.
Right.
You know, we have a little bit of this doubt, you know, that's restrictive, you know, we don't say anything, we don't speak up. So how can anyone know, you know, so that's true.
Exactly.
That was well said.
Thank you. But that's played off of you. So I thank you for that too.
I appreciate it.
Let's see. So let's get into some interesting things. Have you ever had to fire a client? Have you ever said to yourself, that's a show I never want to do again because I never want to be around that particular?
Yeah.
You have?
Mm-hmm. It was a client that I had that I hired 3 women on camera that I personally trained. And the guy messaged my business partner and said, replace them and have these people come, which were guys, which were white males. Replace them and have these people come tomorrow to actually do the show.
Whoa.
And after that, I didn't want to work with that person anymore. And I told my business partner I would not work with this person anymore.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had some moments. But wow.
Mm-hmm. And my business partner, he replaced them. Yeah, he replaced the women. And I said, I'm going to personally call these women and have a serious conversation with them and let them know that, like, I'm not a sellout. Yes, you are being replaced, but I won't choose to receive jobs from this person. It doesn't hurt my pockets that bad it's my integrity I care about more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a little ashamed of your partner.
Yeah, he wanted money. But at the time, he didn't call that person. He agreed with me. We're not going to work with them again, but he did make the replacement.
To finish the show. I can understand finishing the show. And mm-hmm. then he fired the client as well.
Yeah. We agreed. Right, we agreed. My foot was down on that one, and we agreed.
I'm not as ashamed now.
Yeah, no, he was actually nice on that part.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the most memorable moment of your career.
Most memorable moment. The first time, well, no, that was cool, but it was some other cool things. most memorable moment. I have two. I would say that when the first time I was ever flown, oh, I wasn't flown. I was put on a train to film Taraji P. Henson during the Karate Kid promotion. I was brought to her hotel. Someone paid for me to have a nice place. That was the first time someone trusted in my work to send me somewhere to film something for them. And they didn't need to see anything I've done before. They just paid me to do it. That was the first time I did that. And I was really honored for that opportunity. And then the second time was when the first time I filmed Spelling Bee, because I've never worked with something with ESPN and hearing the guys calling on the other channel. And that was through AV. I just thought that was like a really, really cool job to be on. And then seeing superhuman kids spell words that I didn't even know exist. Was also cool, but like, right. You know, just being there, the first time I did it, after I did it back to back, I was like, okay. But the first time I did it, I was like, wow, like all the cameras, the setup, everything like that was just really cool for me to see.
It is actually a very complex setup for something that looks so simple in the end. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we've watched the spelling bees before and we think, oh, well, you know, you get a couple of wide shots, you get a close-up shot and you got one microphone and this is easy. It's not at all. It's not. And it's good that we make it look easy, but mm-hmm. it's almost as complicated as some of the video game wars that they have out there now.
Yeah, exactly. It was just, I was like, whoa, there's a truck that's doing the networking. I didn't know there were actual cars that did broadcast, like trucks that did broadcast. Like, that's how I learned everything about broadcasting at that moment. I was like, wow, it's a director on this truck directing cameras, you know, you satelliting it to the channel. And it was just so cool. Like, it was just, you know, you had all these different camera people come in and they had different jobs and it was just really dope. Then I learned about camera utility. I just learned about all these different jobs and these different positions on that first job. And I think the thing that I learned was all, like you said, all that work, just something that looks so simple.
Exactly. It's amazing. That's when you start getting behind the scenes, right? You start figuring out how all this really happens.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Did I ask you about something on your bucket list?
No.
I didn't think so. All right.
Filming something in Africa is on my bucket list.
Well, so I want you to tell me about something that you might have on your bucket list.
Okay. Filming something in Africa is definitely on my bucket list, whether it's a film, probably a documentary, something that will require me to stay there for months. Oh, I would love that.
That would be nice, love that. Right?
Africa and then Bali will be how I want to travel with that.
You take me with you?
You can come. Yes. I know you're a good traveler.
Carry all your bags.
You can do this. Yeah. You can. I need you with me.
Hey, maybe, you know, maybe you should do something on your own and get it funded, mm-hmm. and then you can take me along and I'll just keep it all organized for you. That's
what we'll do. Okay. that is what you do. You're right. Actually, I'll think of something, some story to tell. Let me visit Africa for the first time and say, this is the story. I'll be back. I'll give you a call. But like, hey, yo, we got the project.
There you go.
All right.
I'd love to do that with you.
Okay. That's what we'll do.
Maybe we can find somebody that'll fund it.
Oh, I've been meeting people out here. We will find somebody. I just have to get confident with that pitching, you know, confident with talking about what you need is what's important. Right. So.
And I know you work with a lot of the younger generation and do a lot of teaching. So what's the best advice that you feel you give to them? Just give me like one or two things of some of the best advice that you give them.
It's okay to try new things. And the other advice I give them a lot is fear is something that you need to face, and it's fun, and fear is not bad. Fear is not bad at all. Fear and failure are friends of yours, and accept them.
Wow.
I tell my mentees that all the time.
Wow. Where were you when I needed to hear that weeks ago?
I got to tell myself that, you know? I call my mentees sometimes and say, hey, what do I tell you? And they're like, you know what you tell me now. Like, thank you. I need to hear it back. That's all.
I think sometimes we do need to hear it back. That's part of the reason I'm doing this and telling people stories and getting word out there. Some people are going to listen to this and go, you know, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to do for people.
Yes, most definitely. Definitely. And I appreciate you, you know, being patient with me and, you know, we've been trying to make this happen. And you know what? I prayed, you know, it's funny because when I first got here, I was doing absolutely nothing for the whole month of September, in majority of October. I was doing absolutely nothing. And then like the end of October hit and like mid-October hit, and a guy I met 2 years ago, who someone in DC referred me to this guy, and I still don't know who this is. I asked him who it is. Somebody on Facebook said, reach out to Brianna. She's a woman behind the camera. And he hasn't been able to tell me. But this guy got me a job out here 2 years ago with Essence. And he called me randomly. And I've been working with him a lot, you know. And it's been like some random days. Like for us to say, we'll work all 2 weeks. They'll say, oh, we're off on Thursday. Then they'll call me on Thursday and show up to work. And I'm just like, you know, and I'm getting used to this on-call kind of thing, you know, mm-hmm. which I make plans with people and I have to be this person and be like, I know is this the day of or the night before, and I hate being that person, you know, and then even moving into my place, like it's not even 100% furnished yet. It's, you know, again, it's an old building in East LA and it was an earthquake a while back and there's cracks that still haven't been, you know, so it's so many things that I'm getting used to, but I like it because it's like, I like that transitional space. You know, mm-hmm. so I've been busy with maybe like getting my apartment together and also getting accustomed to like, oh, this person called me. Let me hop in a car and drive to work. You know what I mean? So random like that. It's not like what we're used to, you know, AV is like, yeah, this is your schedule. You show up and this is your schedule. But
yeah. But I mean, different. even if you were in AV, if somebody said to you, because you've made this transition, you went all the way across the country, you would be dropping everything at some point for somebody to call you. And so even if it were AV and they said, hey, you know what, I thought of you and there's an opening, get your butt down here, you'd still be dropping everything. That's just what you do during a transition, for sure.
That's true. Yeah, because you have to build this rapport. You have to show them that you're available. You can't say, hey, let me come at this hour right now, because you don't know me, you know. And right. So you know, and so that has been a little bit of what made me seem so busy. It's really just me being on time and, well, being on call and having random calls by people whom I don't know and how they know me and whatever, you know, just because I'm constantly on social media letting people know I'm here. Hey, I would like to meet you over coffee. There's a new advice to anybody who moves to LA. LA people do not like you to reach out to them and say, hey, I want to work. I need jobs or something. No. Hey, I need to meet with you. They want to build rapport. I want to go for a hike with you. Let's meet at the park. I want to go for tea. So it's a lot of drinking tea and going out for shots and stuff like that. that I don't really like that feel like better.
Well, you don't feel like doing really it because you just got it. There. You got so much going on that you feel like, you know, what's the point of that? But that's, you're right. That's their culture. That's what they've developed. And I actually think it's a good way to do business, because you do get to know the skills and the person. They're going to recommend you. They're going to put their name on the line to put you out there. So they need to get to know you at least a little bit. It is what we do in DC. We just do it differently, you know, East Coast.
Yeah.
We just do it differently.
Yeah, that's very true. It's different. I think the East Coast people are.
I make you give up your break and talk to me for 15 minutes, you know?
Exactly.
We're horrible. That's horrible. Yeah. It should be. Let's go have coffee. Let's go have tea. Let's go walk in the park. We should be doing that, Bree. We should. It's better for your soul.
You're right. I'm like, I can't just tell you my skills. Here's my resume. Here's my real no. They're like, no. You want to go out with me? Like, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go out with me. If not, I'm not going to respond. I'm like, shucks. You know, so that. So I get the random call from the person who I've been DMing for so long, or the person I've been emailing for so long. And I get that random call. When I get that random call, I'm like, oh, I got to pop up and meet them because I don't want to miss the opportunity to meet them because I just got here. So that's really where I am right now. And I meditated on it, and I think I'm probably going to be doing that for like a year, like constantly just being ready to just leave my house randomly, to do things and
absolutely,
you know, and get comfortable with my new home, because there's things about the house that I have to learn about, you know what I mean? So, you know, stuff like that.
Like internet troubles and roof cracks and earthquakes.
I'm going to send you a picture of this crack.
You should.
It's so sad. It goes through the living room, through the kitchen. It's like through most of the house. And it's like, this is crazy. But yeah, kidding? I'll send you a picture of it.
Yeah. Wow.
But that's LA, man. I mean, some people who they pay $5,000 for a little studio out here, and it's like, I'm surviving. I got a nice price apartment. I'm in East LA, so that's what you got. You get what you pay for. It. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is what it is.
Yeah. And you're lucky that you can do it. You're still young, you're still vibrant. Wow.
Thank you.
I can't believe you're all the way out in LA. I'm happy.
Yeah,
for you.
Where are you now?
I'm in Houston.
East Coast.
Yeah, no.
Oh, you're in Houston. Oh, cool. Houston is where everybody's going these days.
Who's coming here? No, I'm just kidding.
I'm here and there's a lot of creatives coming. There's a lot of productions going that way.
I believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear it's a lot of people who left LA actually during COVID that went to Houston. A couple of actors and some filmmakers and stuff. Maybe because it's affordable, they're buying houses, you know.
They should call me so that we can get to know them in the area for sure.
Okay, cool.
Any of them are listening.
Some Instagram.
Yeah,
I'll send you some stuff, yeah.
And if anybody's listening, they can go to feedthecrewpodcast.com and click on the contact us button. For sure, reach out.
Yeah, like,
Anybody that wants to find Bree too, where do we find you, Bree?
Instagram. It's called I am Bree Monet. That's IAMBRIMONET on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the same.
Awesome. That makes it easy. Well, we're gonna wrap all this up.
All right.
You did a great job.
Thank you. It would have been better in the house, but thank you so much for being patient with me. I appreciate you guys. You and your team, you guys have all been patient. I don't see the team, but thank you, team.
They gave you a thumbs up.
Awesome.
I'm so glad we got to connect. I really am.
Thank you, everybody, for having me on the show. I appreciate you guys. Thank you for being patient with me again. And thank you for asking me great questions. They were great questions.
Being a great guest, and I hope that you will come back and see us at some point, not only to join us in Women in AV, but also to tell us how things are going in LA. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay, cool. Let's do an update for that in a year.
Absolutely.
All right. Have a good luck, guys. Peace.
Thanks. Take care.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us
on Feed the Crew.